You are listening to the Backstage Pass podcast, hosted by Hannah Tridwell and brought to you by Tommy.
Hello, Heather Peace, how are you?
I'm all right, I'm a bit hot. I'm really hot. Yeah, so apologies if like, I just keep having to check the t-shirt and stuff. My God, it's 30 degrees down here and it's only 10:30. 11.
If you
11
need to o'clock. Open that window.
No, it's fine. I'll the window. It's okay. I'll suffer.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I saw recently that through this unprecedented time, you'd done a covers album.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about that, actually, because I saw that you'd done a pay-as-you-feel thing.
I didn't really know. Well, I had a tour booked in April. We all had dates over the summer for various things. The rug was just ripped out from beneath all of us and lots of other people, everybody who works in any sort of entertainment industry or restaurants, everything, like just... Yeah, I've even got a friend who's got a cleaning company who her work halved within like a week, you know.
Oh, God.
And so it, you know, everybody's struggling.
Before it would have been the opposite way around.
No, because they shut the offices down. So, it's just been dreadful. And I always, I've been self-employed all my life, so 25 years. And I always do find a way out of a hole, as it were. So I was playing Eva Cassidy to my kids on a night time. I have done for years, partly because then I think it gives them a real wealth of sort of classic songs, but it also lulls them to sleep. And I've never done a covers record, and I've got fans who've asked me to do it, and I've sort of poo-pooed it because I love writing. But I just started tinkling away on the piano downstairs in the lounge, and I was doing True Colours, actually, in the Cyndi Lauper one, and I just thought, oh, do you know what? I'm going to do my own sort of Eva Cassidy-esque style thing and try and not do the songs that she's done, although she's done that one, and just see what happens. And it took a lot longer than I thought because I've got the kids at home all the time, so I was coming up here into my tiny weeny studio space and laying stuff down. The first thing I did was like invest in a really posh vocal mic, the Neumann thing, because that was the one thing I could never capture when I was doing demos. And that's a really bright Neumann, so it just brings it out because I'm a little bit sort of squished. I just started doing that stuff and pinging it over to Michael, my guitarist, and then pinging it over to Paul, who just played cajon. It's just really simple percussion on some of the records. And then Charlotte Ridley, who's worked as producer on stuff before, co-producer this time on other stuff. Yeah, pinged it over to her and she just sort of finessed it, really. There's nothing else on there, but she sort of finessed the acoustic stuff. So yeah, that, and I had a product at the end. Then I'm like, well, what am I going to do with it? What were we talking about in terms of? Okay, we all have to make a living, and the only way we can do that these days is live gigs, and they're gone. Because the minute I don't get enough streams to warrant being properly paid to support my family. So I sort of made the decision not to put it on any streaming platforms. It's not going to be on iTunes. It's not going to be on Spotify. It's not going to be anywhere. And just to do it that way, directly from my website, really.
Are you still distributed by Absolute?
Yes, I am, but I'm not going to do it this time because then they put it into HMV and Amazon and all of that stuff. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing, you know, the return that we get back is not, well, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And just what you were saying about streaming numbers, it's like the amount of streaming numbers, if you were just solely relying on streaming to pay your bills, you'd have to be, you'd have to be really getting a lot of streams.
Yeah.
It's just mad, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's something about, I'm lucky enough to have a solid fan base. It's not huge, but they're really, really supportive. And I have no want to be any bigger than what I do. It's a lovely size of audience that I get, the gigs that I play and all of that. So I'm really sort of, I'm not ambitious in that level. I want millions of people to know my music. It doesn't bother me. As long as I'm making the people who know me happy and enjoy what I'm producing, then I'm done, really.
You always felt like that?
No, not at all. Back in 2014 when I did an album called The Thin Line, that was ridiculous. And I did like a 2-week radio tour from started in Scotland all the way down south, 3-4 local radios a day, just to get my name out there and build a much bigger base. And it was fantastic because the gigs I sold out then were between 500 and 800 seater venues. It was absolutely amazing. But for the amount of work that went into it, I don't think I could keep that momentum going. to get 800 people in a venue, it's so much work. So I'm happier to play these sort of smaller 200, 300 venues. Not always sell them out, but like, yeah, it's kind of nice.
It takes a while to have like a real insight into what you actually want, I think, with music. Like when you first start out and you're like taking it seriously, I don't know about you, but I just felt like, oh, I need to be as big as Mariah Carey, or you know, yeah, just stupid stuff. Well, not necessarily stupid, but just I didn't really know what I wanted it to be because I only thought it went one way or crashed and burned. I think a lot of people are going to resonate with what you're saying there. And touring in general is like great. Playing the shows is great, but playing the shows is like, what would you say, like 5% of touring?
I know. It's just like that hour and a half. Yeah, it's everything else that goes with it, really. And I suppose having a family as well changes all of that. Because I was doing tours in Australia as well, which I did do one a couple of years ago, but I just...
Oh, wow.
I sort of can't...
How was that?
It was amazing. It was amazing. But the last time...
That sounds great.
The twins were 8 months old and that was hard. I mean, as much as I love Australia, it was really hard being away for 3 weeks from them. I've been an actor and a musician all of my life. It's all I've ever known. And it's like, how do you measure success? And as I get older, like, success is happiness. It's being happy. And it's being able to make a living out of something you love. Like, you work 3/4 of your life, make it something you enjoy. And I've done those things. Sometimes it's been tight. Sometimes it's been really tight. But yeah, I don't. It's not about having a number one record. Of course, that'd be great. But there's a lot of crap that goes with that as well. Like,
yeah,
you know, if you're that famous, like, no, I can go and do a lovely gig and everybody's had a fantastic night and waiting for me outside to sign my name or whatever else. And then I can go down to Sainsbury's and nobody knows who I am. I mean, that's quite a nice balance.
That's perfect. That is perfect.
Yeah.
I always feel sorry for people when they, you know, like somebody really big gets papped outside the shop getting milk and they're hungover. And I'm like, that, you know, is it worth it when you're like really so massive that you can't go to the cinema with your partner or.
No.
But then it's such a hard balance to strike because everybody in, you know, or at least a lot of people in the industry would mark success as how well known you are.
It's not, though. It's not.
No.
And it's about, I absolutely love my fans, the people that come to the gigs. And between us, we've built something really nice. Like, the people who come to my gigs know it's going to be a really pleasant evening. Like, the kind of people that I attract, you know, there's never any bottles of beer chucked over anybody or like just any ridiculous nonsense. It's just like a really nice night. And I think once you know your fan base and you can nurture that, it's so important because ultimately they employ you. And I think it's important not to forget that because, you are only working because they still want to hear your music or whatever else. I think it's just about nurturing. I see you do it. You do it all the time, don't you, with your Patreon and stuff like that? You sort of...
I feel like my core fan base is not actually loads of people, like you say, but those people are always there and in a lot of ways and on different social medias and actually sometimes on iMessage. I talk to them and they're like a lot of them are my friends as well.
Yeah.
And so... Like, that's really nice. I really like Patreon. I think it's crowdfunding in general just feels really good to me when it all goes smoothly. But Patreon is such a good platform that's like a social platform, but that is also like monthly crowdfunding that obviously you feel as a creator that you've got you kind of have a responsibility then to keep sharing stuff and good stuff with a select group of people, no matter what else is happening in that month. But they're always there and they're like a soundboard for demos and stuff. So I really do like Patreon. I've used Pledge Music before, and I know that you used Pledge.
Yeah. And
that's something else.
Yeah, I mean that was I've had literally 2 years from hell, like within the music industry, and the fans were there to totally pick me up.
Has that finished now for you?
Yeah, I mean they've just crashed and burned, bankrupt, took everyone's money. It was absolutely disgraceful. God. Yeah, so I did a whole album and they never gave me the funds, but I had to pay everyone. So essentially, what I did was wrote the album, did the album, paid everybody. And also, I'd still fulfilled all my pledges. So, for example, there was 400 albums that were sold. I still had those produced and sent them out. I still did every single pledge. The whole experience took about 18 months.
Whoa.
It was things like, I did MP3 cover songs for people. I did 60 handwritten song lyric sheets. I played three people's weddings. I mean, the last wedding I did, and I still had to pay my guitarist, Michael. So I'm paying to play at someone's wedding. But I'm proud of the way that I think some artists perhaps didn't fulfill their pledges, and especially smaller bands where you have to actually pay for the products. I think quite a lot of artists where it wasn't paying for the products, like the handwritten song lyric sheets and stuff, people still fulfilled. But it was it was absolutely disgraceful what happened. And, you know, sort of learning more and more about it, how they bought plusher offices and the CEOs had these ridiculous cars and all of that was our money. And they were operating a kind
Did they not sell that off to... they just went...
No, they sort of asked for this 60-day period where they were working out what to do, but all the time they were just siphoning it off. And then ultimately all you've got left is a website because everything else is rented, right? And if that website, if nobody believes in your product anymore, because you've just literally screwed everyone over. Yeah, it was a bitter pill to swallow. And I don't think it would have hit me as hard if I hadn't have had the kids. But not only had I not earned any money towards the family, but I had taken so much time away from being with my family to fulfill everything that was within Pledge. You know, it was a really difficult thing to take. But I'm over it now. We're just talking about it for this. And I had massive support. I found my way out of that by releasing a live album from a gig. I got a company in to come and record everything properly. And then I mixed it myself at home to the best of my ability and let the fans know that this was my way of trying to pull my way out of this hole that Pledge had left me with. And they were bang on it. And they bought the live album, you know, or the live DVD, I can't remember. But so I think that really counts for something as well if you're just super honest with the people that support you. Just let people know where you're at. And that was when we're talking about the pay what you can. So I did the CD for this new album, right? And then I thought, I do want to get a digital download out there. I don't want it streaming. So I offered it up because a lot of people have lost their jobs. Everybody's like, loads of people are broke. I wanted everyone to be able to have the record if they wanted it. But I wanted to let people know, I don't know, you know, if you had been making hand wash or toilet roll, you put in a couple of quid more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I liked that video.
Yeah, but it's true. It's balanced out.
Has it balanced out?
It's actually balanced out. More so, I think most people were rounding.
Oh, great.
A lot of people were rounding up to sort of £10. So I did a suggested price of £7.99, and when I did it, I was nervous. I was like, but I do have faith in humanity because I know what I do. So it's completely worked out fine.
I remember years ago, I can't remember what platform I used, but I did a pay as you feel, and it was just for one song, and I remember being really nervous, but I was actually really pleasantly surprised that the majority of people paid at least what they expected to pay anyway, if it was like a single download. There were a lot of people who paid one penny as well.
Yeah, but that's the thing, it balances it out, doesn't it?
It does.
And yeah, I think at this time, during the pandemic and everything, I think it's given people a time to look at themselves, and they will, whoever did pay a pound, I think they genuinely will have needed to pay a pound. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no judgment on any of it, because so many people have lost their jobs. We're sort of waiting to hear from Park Dean, who hosts the Hear Her Festival that I put on in October, what they're going to do. Because I think they'll open it's set in a holiday park, as you know. I think they're going to open the holiday park, but I don't think they'll be able to open the main venues. So that's something else that, you know, we've already put deposits down on and everything else. So I have to see what happens with that. But I don't see how that can happen either. And also for us, they can't sort of tell us in September, oh yeah, you can go ahead and do it. Because it's like, it's kind of 4 weeks away now. So that's not really viable. Because we haven't even broken even yet in the first 2 years, you know, how hard it is to start something like that. I don't know what people are going to do. I've already been thinking, so my tour got pushed back to September from April, and now it's been pushed back again to April next year. And if in April next year it's like you still can't have 200-300 seater venues, I'm going to just pull all of it and just go back to doing cafe bars, which is literally what I did right at the beginning when I first properly hit the road with stuff, like back in 2009. I did this loads of amazing little cafe bars. There's a great little place called the Guitar Bar in Nottingham, which is literally 50 seater, because they might turn around and say yes, you can have gatherings of 30 to 50 people.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, I won't do full band. I'll just take Michael, be me and Michael again in the car. And you just have to do like 200 gigs instead of 20.
I always have a much more wholesome feeling after I do an intimate gig. I don't know about you, but it's way more special, because you're actually with, you feel like you're there with people.
Well, you're chatting to them as well, aren't you? That's the thing. Like, if you, when you've got all the lights on you and there's like lots of people all crammed in, then you can't really have that connection. But with the, with the small intimate gigs, I used to love that cafe bar stuff. There's the Chattery in Swansea, and there was loads of little places.
Have you played at the I think it's called Comfy Book Shop in Coventry?
No.
I think you'd like that. Add that to your list of your cafe bars that you can hit.
I will. I should start putting a list together now, because we need plans.
They're going to be all booked up by the time. I know.
I might just get myself like a portable sound system and just go from beach to beach on the south coast. I don't know, with a cap that people can flick coins in. Although by that point, we probably won't use money anymore, will we? It'll all be cards, because we can't touch anything.
Yeah.
I started lockdown with short hair. I've got a bobble in now.
I've been all right, because I've got these headphones to disguise what is a very grown out bob. Now that you're working from sort of both sides of the stage, with performing on it and backstage organising it, which do you prefer?
Front of stage.
Do you?
Yeah. It's absolute BS doing this festival, honestly. I mean, it is, honestly. Honestly, it's all the stuff I hate, which is like emailing, getting on the phone. I'm hopeless at getting on the phone. I hate phone calls. I'm so weird about it. I even make Ellie phone up for the takeaway. I'm so weird about phone calls.
And I feel way more socially awkward on a phone call than in person.
Like this, yeah, completely.
I feel my diaphragm go weird when I'm trying to, they're just like, you know, can you tell me your name? And I'm like, Hannah Trigwell. I don't even know what happens.
That's so weird that you've got the same thing. I am so weird about it. And of course, this is like having to phone like musicians' agents. And it's just another experience. I think as an actor and a musician, I'm like really surprised about how well respected and well treated I've been. I will never ever take it for granted again, because honestly, I have been spoken to like shit by
really
booking agents. Honestly, I might have to. If we actually like made the festival a success, I would have to literally get someone else to phone the booking agents. I've wanted to swear at them so many times. Like you had talked to like the smallest of the lowest of the low. It's bizarre.
Why? So, are you asking for something that's very out of order?
No, because we're an unknown festival, right? And they just, obviously they're bigging up their clients and whatever else, but it's been the weirdest, most confidence-knocking experience I've ever had in my life has been trying to organise this and book artists, yeah. It's not managers. Managers are fabulous. And you speak to the manager and it's lovely and it's great. And then they give you the booking agent's number and you're like, oh God, okay. I was hoping I was going to deal with you, but I'm not. Okay. If I could take that away from me, I'd love to just curate and then get someone else to do all the phone calls.
Was it in October?
Yeah, the actual weekend.
And it had all come together despite the, you know, technical difficulties and whatever festivals have. But it was great.
Yeah, it was a good vibe.
Everyone had such a great time. It was really good.
I'd really, really like it to build and build. I mean, whether, you know, I don't know what we'll do. If it doesn't go in October, I was thinking about starting this from the grassroots up again, because this was always meant to be a platform for new, brilliant artists, not necessarily new, but just brilliant artists that hadn't sort of had a leg up, as it were. And it's been, I think what's been hard has been trying to book headliners and stuff like that. That's where it's been very difficult on our side.
Right.
And actually, do we need to do that? Probably not, because there's so much talent out there regardless. And I feel like perhaps we could do day festival things here in Brighton, in London, Leeds, Manchester, and just take the brand there and maybe even include. I used to do a night down here in Brighton and it was like the old style cabaret nights, if you like. There was always like three musicians and two comedians on. And it was a cracking night. And because it was all women, I was doing that back then, you got an all-female audience. Like, girls would come out with their pals for a girls' night out. And I think rather than getting people to commit to something they don't know for a whole weekend, I'm going to start it there and start doing nights and build
That'd
up
be cool.
build up the sisterhood. You know, because if you're doing that every month, then people start going, this is actually a really wicked night. Let's just... Let's just go with my gal pals. Obviously, boys are allowed, but it's nobody's a funny thing, right? It's a funny thing.
Yeah, I know.
Because girls will go to a festival that's all men, but not that many men will go to something where it's predominantly women, and that just says enough about our society, quite frankly. If I was like a billionaire, the first thing I would do is put on an all female lineup music festival that's the best of the best. And when you start going through and putting them all on the same bill, you know, you'd be on, say, Janelle Monáe, Pink,
crazy.
Whatever. Like, it's like, they are there. They are there.
These
absolutely iconic, amazing performers are there. So somebody do it. Some billionaire come in and do it. I blooming would.
Do you ever, like, send emails out to artists that you're like, never in a million years are they going to go for this? Because I sent an email recently to try and get, I'm not going to drop the name, someone, a performer on this podcast, and they can't do it. But I got a response and I was so shocked that they'd even responded that I was like, oh, so it's not like that far away.
But what was the contact that you had, though? Was it directly them or was it?
It was their manager saying something in like a quote that they'd said. She's not doing it, so like bad times, but also, wow, great.
No, I never, do you know what? I think maybe that's where I fall down on the festival as well. Like, I don't have that level of confidence to go out to.
No.
I wish I was a little bit more go-getting and a bit, I don't know. That's why someone has to do it. Someone else has to do that part of the job. Someone who just like, you know, swaggering around going, oh yeah, you want to come and do this? Because I can't. Yeah.
Yeah. We went to Amsterdam one year at Christmas time and did this song with a bunch of other creator and singers and songwriters. And it was a lot of fun, but the guy who ran it really, really was good at talking the talk, and there was nothing to back it up. But I just believed him. I was just like, wow, you, because of the confidence of it. And he managed to make a lot of stuff happen just by being like,
I know,
I'm the tits.
I just totally.
And I was like, God, what must it be like to be that person?
There's someone who runs America. That's exactly what he's done. Like, this is the best thing that you have ever seen. I am telling you it's the best thing. So you know it's the best thing. Like,
that was actually a good impression.
Thanks. I think, you know, as women, we're just not programmed to be so pushy. We're so programmed to apologize, to play down who we are. And then on top of that, being British, it's a bit British to play down and underplay and not sell yourself. So it's really difficult to... If I could have a little bit of that, that'd be great. But then maybe I wouldn't be a very nice person to be around. Because that's the other thing. Those people who are like that, nobody wants to go to the pub with them because they're just like
that's,
that.
That's true. That is true. I think most people who I've met like that have been people that I don't want to spend any time with.
Exactly. So again, it comes down to what's success, and it's being happy. Definitely.
Yeah, true. Are you thinking of doing another original album?
I've already got a single single. Yeah, no, it's done. It's finished. It's called Safe in Love. It's finished, and it sounds like nothing I've done before. And I'm really excited about it, but I need a proper video to go with it that isn't homemade. I've just done a deal with a director, a friend of mine, I'm in the middle of doing a lockdown movie. Which is like this.
Wow.
Yeah, I am. I was filming last week and at a safe distance, obviously, and it's this horror film and with Howard Ford. He's done all sorts of things. I've done another film with him. I said, okay, I'll do it for nothing if you come and direct my music video for this single. And he
said, that's a great trade-off.
Yeah. And then Barbara Mitchin, who wrote Waking the Dead, has done the storyline for said video. So I have to sit on this single because I have to, when we say you don't want to be successful or whatever, like, because I'm really, really proud of the track. So I just think I will just go bang with it, I think, rather than just sometimes. Mm. That's the one thing I don't do. I never do any PR. I never get it right. The last album I did, since my manager went on maternity leave and never came back because she loves being a mum. And I just decided to go it alone, you know. But the one thing I forget, I dropped my last album without doing any PR at all. I thought I've booked the studio, booked the musicians, written the songs, done it all, but no PR. I was like,
wow, that's bold.
That's not where you want to drop.
In a way, if you've got the fan base that you've got,
does it matter?
Does it matter? Like, is it worth paying what you would pay for national, international PR? Would it be worth that? And I don't mean just like financially. Like, I was talking to my auntie the other day about she's thinking about retiring early because lockdown and not being able to do anything has made her think, is my time over the next 6 or 7 years left that I'm working, is it worth me getting that money that I would get to trading that off for my time? A lot of times when I've paid for PR, I don't know if it's worth it, and I would edge towards not.
Yeah, actually. I know. But we're sort of lucky because we have people who sort of know our music and stuff. I can see how it could be really important.
Yeah.
No, not even when you're starting out. You see, the only way to do it is to just gig. You know, when I think about that cafe bar tour I did all those years ago, you know, they were 50-seater venues, you know, and working up to 2014, the massive Thin Line tour, that's the biggest one I've done. And now it's gone back down again.
It's hard with PR to really
measure,
measure the direct, well, if you're just thinking about sales, but then, you know, you performing in a room to 50 people is going to do a lot more to persuade them or like entice them with your music than an article in a massive magazine.
I think it's something about, so that with the festival and stuff, I've been thinking about it a lot anyway, and I think there's something about artists like yourself, myself, you know, stars in Bam Bam Romeo, all the artists that I've had on the Hear Her stage, sort of getting together and supporting each other, because the fact is, like, if you come and play at a thing that I'm at, I know that my audience would then get into you and buy your material. I think there's something about a collaborative thing that we probably need to work on together. And
we
maybe
should do an album.
Well, exactly. Why not? My fans being introduced to you, your fans being introduced to me, and likewise, and everybody feeding into each other. We have to find a new way. You know, we blatantly all want to support each other as musicians. It's just in our DNA. Do you know what I mean? That's what we do. It's why I started the festival. It took up most of my life and literally cost me a fortune. Do you know what I mean? But it was what I believed in and what I felt was fair and right, which is just giving people the next push, you know. And I don't know, there's got to be something collaborative amongst us. I'm not just talking about an all-female thing.
Even if it was just a single track.
I've got a single already for International Women's Day next year. I didn't get it out quick enough. I'm going to send it to you after this. Yeah, I wrote a song that I wanted loads and loads of women to sing on. I will send it over to you. And I didn't have enough time before International Women's Day this year, which was like the 8th of March or something. So I thought I'd save it.
Yeah.
So should we do that?
Yeah, good shout.
Okay.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. You heard it here first.
You might listen to it now and just go, oh no, that's awful. I don't think it's awful.
No, I'm sure it's not. Did you write it?
I did write it, yeah. It's fine.
Well, it's not going to be bad then,
no,
is it?
No. Come on. It's a bit
Believe in yourself.
No, it's a little bit cheesier than maybe, I don't know.
The lockdown film sounds really cool though.
It's a horror film, yeah. I said to Howard E. Shaw about doing that at this time when everyone's like literally a bit anyway, but he's adamant. It's all about working with people you like, isn't it? And he's got a gorgeous energy.
Yeah. I do think people undervalue the traditional trade.
Yeah, it's a total trade off.
Trading one thing for another thing.
Yeah, he just started saying, you know, I'm doing this myself and it's got, you know, I've got not much budget because he's literally doing it himself. And I just said, I don't want paying, but you have to come and do me single. It's like, right, okay. Yeah, it's proper old time trade off. Swap some bread for some eggs, awesome. You know.
But the single's ready right now.
It's done.
Do the video soon.
Yeah, the single's finished. Quite annoying that it's just sitting here, but I just don't know. That's my problem, not having a manager. I don't actually know what to do with it. I've produced the stuff and then I'm like, what do I do now? Do you know?
Did you produce it?
No, Charlotte did it, Charlotte Ridley. So I sent her over the demo and then she sent me something back, which was just wild. It was like you couldn't have
too
been
far.
More. Yeah. And then between us, we honed it in a little bit. So it's not so James Blake because some of the stuff is wild and amazing. But I don't want to completely alienate the audience I've already got. So they do need taking care of. But she's genius. Charlotte's genius. Like she's like an oil painter with her soundscape, and like it's just insane. So I pulled it back a little bit, and we literally did the lead vocals in London about a week before lockdown. So then we were working on the final mixes and stuff electronically in the first part of lockdown.
You seem excited about it then.
I am. I
want to hear it. Can you send me it?
I'll send it you. And what are you doing? Have you got any stuff coming up?
Yes, sort of every 6 to 8 weeks I'll be releasing a single, and they will come together as an album.
Are you mixing and mastering? I'm not.
I
was gonna say I can't even.
I could I could try and do it, but I feel like for the amount of time I would spend doing that, it would not be a good product anyway at the end of it, because I'm so amateur at mixing.
So I try
and delegate stuff like that out. At the moment, I'm just thinking of dropping every one as a single, because when I put out my first album, the singles, as they naturally do, got listened to a lot more than the rest of the tracks on the album. But there were some tracks on the album that I was like, oh, but that's like such a good track. Like, that track means the most to me. Why didn't I put that out as a single? But now I'm just sort of like, maybe I should just release every song as a single and just give it as much chance as possible for people to hear it. So that's the plan at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, what are people doing with albums these days? I don't know. I've got a record player, and sort of listening to like favorite records is just an absolute joy, like Purple Rain or Rumours. Yeah. There's a real placement of where the songs are and the spacing in between the songs and all of that stuff that I absolutely love. And I've kind of gone back to that. I'm just sort of collecting records now.
Well, that leads me nicely into my penultimate question, which is, what is your track of the week?
This week?
Well, just the track that you're listening to a lot this week.
I've literally been listening to Radio 4.
I love Radio 4. On a long car journey, Radio 4 is the one.
I have. What have I been putting on, though?
They don't play any music, do they?
No. I've got my woman's hour. Then I'm not so keen on the plays. Basically, anything with actors in, I turn it off. That's really bad, isn't it? I don't know why that is. Maybe you should be telling me. I literally don't know what's in the charts right now, but it's probably because I've been up here, like, just...
I'm not clued up on the charts at the moment.
Well, what's your track of the week then?
Do you know what I've been listening to a lot lately, which is going to make me sound really boring? Desiree.
Oh, Desiree's amazing. Desiree's amazing. We tried to get her. We wanted to get her for the festival.
Did you really?
Yeah. She's amazing.
That would have been great.
She's awesome. Yeah, she's one of the best vocalists this country has produced. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I feel like her songs are life-changing for me. Or at least take my mood somewhere else straight away.
Classic just, production, silky smooth vocal, you can't beat that. See, because I'm a big fan of Beverly Knight. Tried to get Beverly Knight.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's just fantastic. Again, awesome vocalist. I played Manchester Pride one year when a really good friend of mine, Jackie Crozier, was running it. And Beverly Knight was playing on the Sunday night. But I had to come back to Brighton and was going to miss her. And Jackie knew how big a fan I was. And so she took me into the main... I basically watched her two-hour sound check on my own, just with Jackie.
Wow.
And she's phenomenal. She was just sound checking, awesome. And it was like... It was ridiculous. It was just a masterclass in how to deliver a vocal, honestly, with absolutely no effort whatsoever. Yeah. And hopefully she'll see this and then be really pleased that I've given her a shout-out and come along to hear her.
Yeah, she should, because hear her is a really big deal, and it's the biggest thing ever and the best. And but I own it though as well. Like, I've never been to a festival like that before. I don't know if there's a festival that exists like that. I think it's amazing.
In what way? Just
I just think, like, the atmosphere was so, everyone wanted each other to have a great time, and I've never ever been to a festival like that.
Yeah, I felt
I don't know how you created that. I don't really understand how that was created, but I've never been to a festival like that before.
That's all we wanted.
You know, usually at a festival, people are very, you know, in their own groups and just getting on with their own stuff, and that's absolutely cool. But it was really special. It was really special. I don't know if you can construct that or if that was done on purpose, but it was really special.
I think, you know, like, there was a big, big percentage of fans of mine who were at that festival. And then there was people who are not necessarily my fans, but that feeling at that festival is what you get in my gigs. Seriously. I don't know how I've attracted. Yeah. And I don't know whether that just filtered to the rest of the festival goers that were there, but there was all I could say. It just felt quite kind Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It felt quite kind and warm and welcoming. And
I felt like everyone was about to buy me a drink. Yeah. Everyone. And not for any reason other than, oh, you're a person. Hey, do you want a drink? Do you know what I mean? It was just great. It was cool.
Yeah. Well, I really hope we can make it work and get some sponsors in. That's what we need. We worked so hard on trying to get sponsorship because I can't like financially support it in the sense of holding the whole thing up.
Oh, it's a big
and it's just perfect. Yeah, I just want to get some sponsors. If anyone's listening to this, then come forward. We will big up your brand big time. I want it to do well, and I also want to hit a point where through all the campaigning that's going on at PRS for the 50-50 lineup across music festivals, you know, and everybody that's signed up to the Key Change initiative. I want to be able to welcome fellas to play at the festival as well. I thought it'd be interesting if we take the whole sort of festival lineup across the year, and whatever percentage was women at other festivals, we'll allow that percentage fellas to play. Oh, we don't let them play until it's 50-50, and then we'll, you know, welcome with open arms our first fellas. Yeah,
it's such a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, but it's been great speaking to you, and thanks very much for chatting with me. I'm going to ask you one final question, which is, what is the best lesson that you've learned in your career so far?
It's quite a famous lesson, really, and that is, be kind to everyone on your way up, because you never know when you're on your way down. And it's, do you know what?
That's a good one.
It's so, so true. I mean, I am naturally the same to anyone that I meet in my life. That's just who I am, thankfully. But, you know, when I did a TV show called London's Burning back when I was sort of 23, there was a guy who was like, the runner going and getting everyone a cup of tea, who's now like so high up at ITV.
Really?
Yeah, because it's 28 years later, and he was amazing then. And then you're just like, everybody has their journey, and life does that. It does that. And when you're here, doesn't matter, because you will go like that. Everybody.
Yeah, true.
I don't care how successful you are. There are peaks and troughs through life. So just be kind. Mm. That's it.
Thanks very much for speaking to me today.
It's been lovely.
Have a great day.
I will.
The sun is out.
I know.
Let's go and get some sun.
Perfect. So I'm going to go get that paddling pool filled up for when Annie gets back from school at lunchtime. Yeah. Wicked.
Awesome. Thanks for tuning into this episode. Be sure to hit subscribe and leave a comment to let us know what you think. And I will see you next time on Backstage Pass.